Hey everyone, I'm Chris Hall and you're listening to the Downtime Podcast, where we take you behind the scenes of elite mountain biking. First up, just want to say a massive thank you to everyone that's been in touch. It's really nice for me to know that you're enjoying what we're doing, and also really cool to find out that you've been learning things and taking the information from our guests and putting it into practice. That's what this was all about, so it's really cool that that's happening. If you are enjoying it and you've got a couple of minutes, we'd really appreciate an iTunes review. That helps us out loads. But also keep in touch and reach out to us on social media. We're Downtime Podcast on Instagram, The Downtime Podcast on Facebook, and Downtime Tweets on Twitter. Also, congratulations to our competition winners. So we had an O'Neill jersey signed by Greg Minar. That was won by Kirsty McNee. Hopefully that's got to you by now. And also we had a Mountain Bike Strength Factory online training program to give away, and that was won by John Waghorn. So congratulations. Okay, so for this week's guest, we've got 2014 World Cup downhill champion Manon Carpenter. We talked to Manon about recovering from injuries that she sustained at the Worlds last year, her approach to riding with control, her move to Radon, her use of sports psychology, and many other things. So without further ado, here's episode 13 with Manon Carpenter. Manon Carpenter, welcome to the Downtime Podcast. Thanks for coming on.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Good stuff. So, and before we get stuck into the riding side of things, you've fairly recently started, is it a geology degree?
Yeah.
Cool. Can you explain what geology is for people like me that aren't totally sure?
It's funny the amount of people who don't know. It's, I guess if you did geography in school, it's like the physical side of it, maybe. So it's study of the earth and like the processes that go on with the earth, I guess, like climate systems and earth systems. I guess that's the environmental side of it, and then there's also all the mining and like how you get materials from the earth for like, I guess, just about everything in life. So it's been really interesting for learning, and I guess they're going to tell you it's relevant, but quite interesting to see all the different ways it's used and needed for things that we do.
Yeah, I was going to ask, do you think you've been influenced by the amount of time you spent in the mountains seeing some of these kind of physical landforms? And is that what got you interested in it?
I think it goes with it. And it's funny, the amount of mountain bikers I've come across who've done geology or something similar. And also in the at the uni mountain bike club, I think most people are either engineers or people who do earth sciences. I guess I like the outdoors. I'm interested in how it all works, and I guess mountains are quite a big part of what we study as well. I guess just interested in that sort of stuff.
Yeah. So were the uni mountain biking club pretty excited when you turned up to start then?
It's really funny because I went, I had a broken collarbone when Freshers was on. So I went along to the sports clubs. There was a few I was interested in looking at. So I had a sling on, but, I think they just kind of, I was just a girl with a broken arm when I went to see them. So I just signed up and then figured I'd go along later on when I was fixed. And I think some people knew I raced and some people didn't know. Did a few uplift days with them, and it's quite funny getting chased down or trying to chase the others.
Yeah, that's awesome. So do you guys have like a regular ride with a uni club, or is it more just weekends away and uplift days and things?
The uni club does quite a lot. I haven't managed to go along to that as much as I would have liked to, maybe. Mm-hmm. But I've done, like, when they've had uplift days locally, I've been along to them. They do a few weekends away. And then there were student champs in April in Innerleithen, so we went up there for that. And that was good fun. And quite an experience. First student champs ever.
Yeah, it's quite a weekend. I've been to a few of those over my time. So, quite amusing the amount of alcohol that can be consumed alongside racing.
Yeah, Friday night was quite a loud one.
Excellent.
I was trying to sleep.
And did you manage to take the win up there?
I did. There was quite a good competition, actually. A local girl from Stirling, Eleanor Melton.
Okay.
I think that's her surname. She races some EWSs.
Right.
But she was getting closer and closer to me all weekend. And she put up in a really good run for finals, and then she crashed somewhere, I think, and hit her hip. But yeah, she was going pretty quick and put some pressure on me.
Awesome. Yeah, nice to have some competition, definitely. That's cool. So how do you fit the degree side of things in around riding then? It's a lot of commitments with a busy training and racing calendar and a degree to do as well.
Yeah, well, so I called them up in the summer just to see if it was possible really and how it would all work. And the uni term goes pretty much from October till start of April. Like the 1st of April was the last time I went in, like into uni for studying. Which worked quite well really. Like I missed a week for team camps. But you get December off. Yeah, you get most of December off. I mean, you're supposed to be revising. And then from April really I could focus on getting ready for Lords and then some exams in May. So it's added like a bit of extra stress, but it's been manageable so far. And I think first year, I guess last time I was in school was quite a while ago, so I have had to learn quite a lot of stuff, but I also had some good background knowledge from doing geology in school.
Okay.
So that's made it easier. Then we'll see how next year goes, really. It's kind of been a case of seeing how it goes. Yeah. And I guess, like, if I need to take my time with uni, I can. I'm not in any particular rush to get it finished. So, yeah, just seeing how it goes. And so far, it's worked out okay.
Excellent. And do you have any kind of routines or habits that you use to help you, you know, manage that hectic amount of work that you've got on your plate? How do you deal with that?
I guess being quite organized. I've always got a list on my phone of things that need to be done, or like, I guess, how the week's going actually. That was the best thing I was doing through the winter anyway, was like printing out my timetable for the week and then just filling in. It almost makes it quite easy to schedule training because you know when you're going to be in lectures, and then you just fit in training around that. And then you know the days that you've got off or afternoons you can go ride. And you're kind of on the same program as everyone else then, like everyone else who rides around here. It's like riding on the weekend. Wednesdays or if you get days off in the week. Just fitting it all in really and making it work. But I guess I decided I wanted... I always planned on going to uni at some point. Like originally I was just going to take a gap year and then go racing. Take a gap year and then go to uni. But obviously like took quite a few gap years. I think it was 5 years I'd done it professionally, like full time, training for racing. And I guess realized that in the winter you do have some spare time on your hands. Like if you're at home training, you can't do stuff all the time and you do need to rest. And yes, I wanted something productive to do while I was resting. I just felt like I could fit something in. Obviously in the summer it's very busy, but I've got time in the winter to do something else as well.
Have you found it beneficial to have another focus beyond riding? Does that help you kind of, you know, create your priorities and give riding full attention when you are riding rather than when you've just got riding and training to think about?
I think I've enjoyed having the structure. I have enjoyed having the structure of just a routine at home, I guess. So like I'm at home training, and like you have to get up in the morning to go to your lectures, and like, yeah, I guess you just have more, you feel like you get a lot more into your day. Which I like. And then when you go riding, yeah, it's nice just to, you know, go and ride in for the fun of it just different, I guess. I think I just like how it feels like you get a lot more into your days.
That makes sense. You mentioned having a little bit more time over the winter. I mean, you I think had a fairly interesting winter. Not only have you taken on the university course, but you had a pretty bad collarbone break at Worlds to fix. I think you had a plate removed from your arm and had your eyes lasered through that winter. Is that right?
Yeah. That was, I guess, from September to, I guess, the start of November I started riding again, or I started doing, like sport again, I guess. or activities. So yeah, that added some extra things to do. Yeah, I guess obviously the cholera unavoidable, or, you know, obviously that wasn't planned. But seeing as I broke my collarbone and had to get surgery on that, it made sense for me to take head metal work in my arm from 2010. And I think the last 2 years I started to notice it, or like realise that it was kind of giving me issues a little bit. But it's quite a scary decision to take it out, because you have to get told about all the risks and nerve damage and stuff. So I'd kind of been putting it off. But it seemed like a good opportunity to do it, seeing as it's at the end of the season. So yeah, just as soon as I knew I had to have surgery on my collarbone, like, I'm not a big fan of getting surgeries and injuries and stuff, but figured I'd just get it done and get it out of the way. And then, yeah, and it's been, I'm really glad I did it. Like, it's made a difference. Yeah, and then obviously just had those 2 months off, and then I guess you're kind of fresh and ready to start doing stuff again. Then afterwards, you'd had a break from riding, and it was cool to be able to get back on.
Yeah. So when you say you have 2 months off, is that completely off, i.e. kind of no exercise, or do you find a way to keep your fitness level ticking over and do some kind of work on your body, some kind of exercise?
Well, I would have. I guess having surgery is quite intense. So I had my collarbone, and then 2 weeks after that, I had my arm plate removed. And then I think maybe 2 weeks after that, I looked into getting my eyes done. And I didn't realise that when you have your eyes lasered, you actually have to, you're supposed to have 6 weeks off sport, or off contact sport, sorry. So I was glad I looked into it then and didn't leave it later on into the winter, because I wouldn't have been able to do it. So yeah, I just took the decision then to get it done, and I got it done as soon as I could. And then 2 weeks off, I think, like, not doing much, and then started doing some, I think after a week I did some running. And then you can do swimming after 2 weeks, which was good for my arm. And then I think I did riding like 3 or 4 weeks after. And again, because I'd had the plate taken out my arm, they tell you to give that some time to heal as well. So I was trying to be sensible and not rush anything and be in a good place for riding rather than trying to rush back and cause any complications.
Do you notice much of a loss of fitness or strength or mobility when you have a block of time off like that, or are you more focused on the recovery?
Didn't notice too much. Well, I guess it's kind of, you have a break at the end of the season anyway, like you'll have a bit of time off just to, I guess you'll kind of ride actually, so you will be doing something. So I did notice, but it doesn't take long for it to come back.
Okay.
I think, like, I had a fitness test, like, just to see where I was before we started training, and like the week before, I was going out on a road bike, and it was a bit of a shock to the system, I guess. I don't know. I went to go out for a steady ride and ended up going up the steepest hill that I found in South Wales. And then, yeah, realised that my body needed waking up again. But, like, once I started training and stuff, it comes back. I guess the biggest weakness was in my right arm, because obviously the right side was my collarbone, and also the plate that I had taken out.
Right.
But I guess, like, whatever you're doing training wise, you're going to throw yourself into it, so it's going to be hard whatever you're doing. It's just what the focus is. So the focus was rehab for a while, but on all sorts of on all parts of your body as well, like any imbalances, like between your legs, or if you get a sore back from racing over the year, it's just a bit of an all over body focus when you start training again.
What does that kind of rehab work look like then, compared to a more strength or fitness building stuff? What's different about it? What kind of things are you doing in a rehab phase?
Like, when you start back training, you wouldn't go straight into lifting heavy weights, like with a bar and Olympic lifting and stuff, because that doesn't really iron out any of the differences. So, like, single arm, single leg work, and okay, I guess some balance work, mobility. yeah, like single arm, single leg, like core work. Yeah, I guess a lot of, I don't know.
So still pretty challenging stuff, but maybe lower impact, lower weights.
Yeah, and I'm sure you can hear more from like a strength conditioning coach.
Yeah.
Because I can just like regurgitate what I can remember doing.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, you do like higher reps as well. Okay. So you're not like lifting really heavy. You're like building a base before you lift heavy. So like, yeah, like a strong base, I think, and trying to get both arms similar and both legs similar. And then when that's in a good place, you can go on to lifting heavy stuff then safely.
That makes sense. And you mentioned a fitness test. What kind of things are you having measured when you do that? What are the sort of metrics that you're looking at and comparing back to either previous fitness tests or looking to improve?
I think the main thing we were looking at, so I started training with Alan Milway again in September. And I guess I last trained with him in 2014. So he had kind of knowledge of where I was at then.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of knew where we wanted to go to. So that was quite beneficial after being off for a while. And we looked mainly at, I guess, like general fitness levels and measuring. It's more complicated than I know about
okay.
myself, but measuring like lactic acid as well, like how that works, like when that kicks in. Over a certain period of effort.
Okay, so like a threshold of lactic acid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, so where your threshold is basically. And when we first did one, mine was quite low, and it was a lot lower than it used to be, which makes sense really. So we knew we had to improve that. So that was the first step, to do some longer rides and longer intervals and stuff just to get that fitness back again, which didn't take long really. So yeah, fitness was down, but it doesn't take, you know, too long for it to come back again.
Yeah. So you mentioned that you moved back to Alan Milway. So you were last with Alan in 2014, which certainly on paper is probably your most successful season to date with series and world championships. How important is it for you to be back with Alan? Was that a conscious decision because of the results you were seeing then, or is it something that just kind of came about? How important is your strength and conditioning coach or your trainer in this world now?
Yeah, for me it's important, and obviously because I enjoyed training with Alan and I enjoyed what we did, so it's quite good to, you know, to enjoy what you're doing over the winter. And yeah, I trained with Alan from a junior to 2014, or from the end of junior to 2014. And when I changed team and I was looking at, you know, who I was going to work with, Alan also contacted me saying that he was free to do something if I wanted to. And it just made sense. And especially after injury, like knowing that he knew where I'd been, you know, I was riding really well. Yeah, so he knew where we wanted to go. Yeah, made sense really.
Excellent, good stuff. So coming back from an injury like that, then it was a pretty horrible crash. I watched it back this morning when I was thinking about questions for today. How do you get back on a bike and get back up to speed? Because and with the best will in the world, a crash like that's going to kind of knock your confidence a little bit, I guess.
Yeah, I think when I first, so after having some time off the bike, I was just really excited to get back on the bike and riding stuff at home. It just felt really good to be back on the bike. But I guess when you get to like some higher speeds, maybe, and yeah, like super fast tracks, I think you can get, I guess, just it playing on your mind a little bit. Or I guess when you're riding, I'm sure everyone knows that if you're looking at something that's scaring you a bit, you can either think of how it's going to go well or think of how it's going to go wrong. It's kind of like that battle going on in your head, and kind of which side wins. And I think if you have had an injury at the start, it's quite easy for the how it's going to go wrong side to win. So yeah, I guess it is just building confidence. And I'm kind of, I think so far this year, I've realized that I've got to be patient with it, because you do come across obstacles quite a lot on racetracks that you have to you know, decide if it's going to go right or if it's going to go wrong, and have the confidence to hit, you know, the jumps or fast sections. But like, obviously you can go back and do it again, because, you know, I'm racing workups, and, you know, riding gnarly tracks. And I think it's just knowing that you have done that before and you can still do it. And yeah, I guess just learning to, I guess, cope with, I don't know, any, you know, if you do have a bit more nervousness about something, just knowing that your confidence will come back, and you just have to build it up over time. And obviously just remembering, like, how good it is when you do hit stuff that you've been nervous of. So just trying to keep that in mind.
So taking your time over it rather than kind of beating yourself up and trying to flick a switch and turn that fear off immediately. You've worked over a period of time, I guess it sounds like, to get back to where you want to be.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it depends what kind of person you are as well, actually, because I'm sure some people can go straight back to it, but then others, I guess I like to be quite in control when I'm riding, or I don't know, I guess I'd say I'm more of a sensible rider. I don't know. So I don't like to crash a lot, and I don't like, you know, I don't see myself as someone who injures themselves a lot, but it does happen occasionally.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about that, actually. I think a lot of people, when they think about certainly downhill mountain biking, they imagine that everyone's kind of, you know, they don't care about the risks. They're all kind of gung-ho adrenaline junkies that will throw themselves off anything and deal with the consequences. And I get the impression that with actually quite a number of riders, but certainly with, you know, you're amongst that crew, I think it feels like you're much more calculated about the risk that you're taking. How do you approach that at a World Cup event? Because, you know, obviously speed is the most important thing, but you've got to get through the season, right?
Yeah, definitely. And like, someone was asking me earlier, actually, about, like, you know, what if someone just completely fearless came along and tried riding? And I think, like, if you had someone who just went super fast everywhere, like, probably not going to have a good race run either, because they're probably going to crash someone. And there is quite, yeah, like, you have to, guess it's calculated risk, but also, like, calculating how to ride the track as well, because you have to be, within your, you know, I don't think you can ride 110% all the time and expect to finish your race runs, or to have, you know, a race run with no mistakes. I think someone was asking me, you know, what percentage do I have to ride at to try and win a World Cup? And I honestly think you have to be, to a certain extent, you know, in control. Like, you have to know where you're going. You have to put your bike where you want it to go. And I think what holds you back is hesitation. So you have to just, no hesitations, but riding on your limit. And that's, you know, how you get a fast race run.
Yeah. Are there ever times where you consciously go, you know, beyond your limit, or you get a bit carried away, either through enjoyment or, you know, pure kind of red mist trying to get the win? Or do you always manage to hold that line?
Well, yeah, definitely. I'd probably say world champs, actually, because I knew I really wanted to go for it. And I said afterwards, like, I wonder if I'd made it past the first turn, like, how far I'd have got into the track. Would I have held on to the end, or would you not? And I guess world champs is a bit like that. You see that a lot. And just at the event with lots of people crashing and, you know, just because it's win or nothing, really. And I guess it is finding that fine line. And, like, when you have your best race runs, it's when you're, you know, you're on the edge of your limit and riding, yeah, like, no hesitation, complete commitment. And that's where you're always aiming to get to. And I think a lot of people say it's really hard to get the perfect race when there's always something you could have done better. But yeah, that's what you're aiming for. And it's not often, I didn't say, just back to your question, it's not often that crashes like world champs will happen for me. or like red mist moments, or like, I don't know.
What about world? I mean, is it worlds repeatably for you? Like, was worlds 2014 the same? Was it one of those, I'm going to give it more than I would normally and, you know, see what happens? Or was that a controlled effort more?
There is something about world champs that I do really like, that it's just a one-off race and you can just go for it. And yeah, I think so. Like, I guess my history of world champs, like, I crashed the year before Norway in South Africa because I wanted to give it everything. And I crashed quite early into my run then. But then the next year, obviously, it worked. And the year after, I think it was Andorra. I had a really good feeling as well for my race run then. So, yeah, I don't know. I guess world champs, I guess also where I crashed, did like a massive hole had developed. So it's kind of just a case of hitting the hole. That sent me over the bars.
Yeah, so it was an unexpected track condition thing rather than going beyond the limit.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, I guess I did hit the hole, but I don't know. I don't know how you define what sorts of crashes you have, but it was definitely unexpected. But I think world champs is definitely like a trying to go for 100% full commitment and no holding back.
Yeah, cool. And how's it been going this year then with striking that balance? Do you feel like you've had a good first few races? Are you happy with where you're at?
I wouldn't say happy with where I'm at results-wise. Like, I'd always aim for a top three. That's where I aim for. I aim for higher, really. But I guess you can say you've had a good weekend if you're in the top three.
Yeah, for sure, especially these days.
Yeah. So it has been a case of, I think, realizing that I've got to be a little bit patient with getting back to full speed and feeling, being a bit more nervous than I'd expect to be with certain obstacles on the track. There is a case of having to build back, and I guess the aim is building back to 100% full commitment. That is the aim.
Cool. So there's still a little way to go in the kind of overall recovery process then, whether it's the physical or the mental elements of it.
Yeah, I think so. I think a lot of it is mental, which is almost the hardest because it's really hard to control your brain. And it would be nice to just flick a switch and, you know, ride the best you ever have. Well, for me anyway, I think a lot of people, you know, it does take a bit more to find to find the limit again, really, and to trust that you know where the limit is.
Do you get any external kind of support on that mental side of things? I've heard a couple of people, certainly in the men's field, talk about kind of, I don't know whether you'd call them a mental coach or whatever. Is that anything have you ever worked with anyone like that or used kind of control techniques or whatever to try and help that side of things? Or is it just something that develops as you ride more and you get your confidence back?
I think a lot of it is from just your own personal experience, knowing how you feel and how you have felt and what made you feel that way at the time. But I do see sports psychologists, I guess, as sort of like mental mental coaches, but yeah, it's really good to kind of get your thoughts straight and to think to think rationally about things.
Do they give you any kind of techniques that maybe other people could try? Is there any like a little method that they've given you that you find works, or is it a bit more complex than that?
A few things that you build up personally that you kind of, I guess, thinking about your own personal experiences and kind of like, again, like arranging, like putting your thoughts straight, I guess. But there's, I don't think I've been an easy one. Or I guess a lot of it is learning how to control your thoughts and how to make it easier to control your thoughts, because it is pretty hard when you're in a stressful situation or, to control what your thoughts are doing. But one definitely is like thinking about the positive, you know, thinking positively rather than negatively, and how to do that. And like, the more you think positively, the easier it is to think positively. Or if you start thinking negatively, it's quite easy to keep on that train and thinking negatively, and then you're kind of in a bad place. So yeah, like last time I was talking to a psychologist I see from Cardiff Uni, and we were talking about how if you're kind of not feeling confident, or I guess thinking negatively, you can imagine the worst case scenario. And I think a lot of people, if they imagine a crash, it could be like absolutely catastrophic, and like, or like you just imagine how it's going to go wrong, but actually it's never really that bad. And if you're thinking positively, you know, when you're confident and you're looking to jump or anything, you know, you could be like, oh, it'll be fine. And that's two different ways you can look at it. You can either imagine it going bright and being like, oh yeah, it'll, you know, it'll be fine, or, you know, I don't know, the worst thing will happen, you end up somersaulting off down the track somewhere. And it's like, yeah, just trying to train yourself to think about the positive one.
Yeah, always choosing the positive view rather than the negative, I guess.
Yeah.
It is amazing what you can get away with when you go into something with a positive attitude, I think. Like, jumps are a good example of that, where if you go in with confidence, 9 times out of 10, or probably more than 9 times out of 10, it works. If you go in worrying about it, things start to go wrong pretty quickly.
Yeah, exactly that. So just, and it's a hard one to do because you can't just, like, I don't know, it's hard to just magic up confidence. It's kind of something that builds from riding or how you're feeling. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I guess anything you can do to help you be in the right place on a race weekend.
But, and it sounds like that mental side, the psychology side of things, is also, you know, it's part of your overall plan. You're not just expecting that that's going to happen for you. You're putting some effort into that side of things, as well as the, you know, the fitness, the racing, the technique.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess you do as much as you can to be prepared and in a good place on a race weekend. So yeah, anything you can do in the off season or leading up to race that will help that, it'll just make it easier for you.
Okay, so over the winter, you not only kind of got quite a lot of your body modified and fixed, you also changed teams, moved over from, was it 6 years with Madison Saracen onto Radon? I'm guessing they probably weren't the only team that were, you know, interested in having you on board. Can you talk us a little bit through how you approach choosing a team, kind of what was important to you? Because I think, I mean, having been at the Fort William World Cup and had a good look round, all the teams are very different in the way they set up. They seem to have very different atmospheres. What was important for you in that decision?
Yeah, you're completely right in that a lot of the teams have completely different vibes or in setups and how they work. So I guess I was contacting as many teams as I could, just to see, first of all, who was interested. And then to see, I guess, what options you've got, and talk to team managers from those teams, and yeah, see if you, I guess it's crazy, but yeah, you want to see if you'd get on with that person, because obviously they're the ones running the team. And then how the team setup's going to look, what sponsors they're going to use, what races they want to do, what are their expectations there are through the year. And, I guess you contacted me, I guess in the middle of the year last year, and we met up in Crankworx Whistler and had a meeting there. And I guess, like, first of all, and I've always thought it was the same with Madison, like when they first contacted me, they really wanted me on the team, which is such a, I think that's really important. Like, obviously, you want someone who believes in you, or who, you know, sees your value, or, you know, just wants to have you on board, is much better than trying to convince someone maybe that why they need you on board. So it was quite easy really when talking to Houston. I think from the first meeting, I got a good feeling about the team, and yeah, met a few more of the people who were involved and seemed like they were a good group, and yeah, happy with all the sponsors that they were going to use. And yeah, it just kind of felt like it would be a good place to go. And like, yeah, so far everything's been really good. really like the way the team works and everyone in the team. And so I'm happy.
Excellent. Yeah,
where I ended up.
It's an impressive setup. A lot of them are these days, but certainly you guys, yeah, it looked like you had a really cool pit setup, plenty of space and also some space to kind of get away from things a little bit when it gets a bit hectic with fans and media and stuff. Okay. We're getting pretty close to the end of our time together today. We've got a couple of questions that we've asked quite a lot of our guests, so it'd be interesting to get your take on those. The first one is, if you had to give some advice to your 16-year-old self, what advice would you give them?
I guess keep doing what you're doing, because it works out quite well. Yeah, I was in school and racing, and had a really good time racing from 16 onwards, and school went quite well as well. So yeah, keep doing what you're doing, and enjoy it.
And do you think, you know, has persistence been important? That, you know, the fact that you've never given up, have there been times when you've thought, you know, this is really hard and I'm not getting where I want to, I might stop doing it? Or have you always kind of been happy with the progress that you've made through the sport?
Yeah, I think happy, like, I was always like building, and yeah, you're just chasing a goal. And then I guess the last 2 years, you know, I've been wanting more than I've been getting, I guess.
Yeah.
It's just a case of knowing that, you have to be persistent. You have to keep going. And that's just how it goes sometimes, I guess. And that's, you can't always be the best, but you can always try your best to, I guess you just keep trying your best.
Yeah.
I'm plugging away really. I read Tracy Hannah's interview after Fort William World Cup, and that was really interesting because, just saying, you just keep doing what you can and keep doing your best, and, where you end up, as long as you tried your hardest, you've given it everything then.
Yeah. And 2014 was obviously, it was a demonstration of exactly what you were capable of. And for some people, I guess they probably could have retired happy after that season. You've carried on going. Are you more hungry now than you were back then, do you think? Or
I guess when I won it, how old was I? I guess it was only a couple of years into my elite career, so it would have been quite early to retire then. After 2014, I really wanted to do it again, and show that I could do it again. And I still do, really. And I guess, your perceptions have to change a little bit when you've, now I've had a couple of fourth places and I want to get into third, or I want to get into the top three. Third would be quite happy with, but, I still want the top spot, really. That's where everyone races for and that's what everyone trains for. I guess you still just go into a race weekend as you always would, and try your best, and then where you end up is where you end up. Still aiming for the top spot, and I know how it felt, and it was pretty amazing. And I think for everyone racing, that's the ultimate goal.
Cool. And then just a final question then for today: if you had for our guests, if they had £100 to spend on something to help improve their performance, what would you recommend they spend that money on? It could be a bike component or some kind of gadget or training or a book or whatever. Where would you recommend they spend that money?
Probably on a stopwatch and some uplift days.
Very good
and
answer.
Go and ride a track and try and go faster on it, keep pushing. I think actually not many people do that, or when I've done it with people who don't normally do it, they said how good it's been to just ride one track, focus on one track and try and build speed on it.
Cool. And would you recommend breaking the track down, doing time segments, or are you talking about just doing the full track with a stopwatch, sort of top to bottom times?
£100 wouldn't get you free lap poles. So just get a stopwatch. And I think top to bottom works, because you have to, like, for a race run, you have to do top to bottom fast. You know, it's no good just doing one section fast. You have to link it all together. And it's quite easy to stop, I think, on full runs as well. Or, like, you know, you do half a track and then you stop and have a chat and then carry on. But, yeah, I think just stop watching top to bottom. Yeah, practice doing full runs fast.
Excellent. Yeah, really good answer. I like that one. Nice one. Thank you. So if people want to find out a bit more about you, Marilyn, where can they find you on social media?
On all the usuals, Instagram, Facebook and Twitter, just Marilyn Carpenter. So it's quite simple.
Awesome. And you've got a little video project this year, is that right?
Yeah, so something I've been working on with Monster, just like 1 minute episodes. The idea was to cover me over the winter, but it's kind of stretched out. So we did some on rehab and then the first race, and I've got one riding at home coming out soon, and did a really cool project in France as well with female motocross world champion Livia Lancelot.
Awesome.
And I think there'll be some more through the year, so it's been quite fun to be involved with, and that's on YouTube again under Marilyn Carpenter. You can find them there.
Awesome, good stuff. Well, thanks for taking the time today, Marilyn. We really appreciate it, and I'm sure everyone will enjoy listening. We wish you the best of luck for your continued journey to the top of the podium, and look forward to seeing how you get on for the rest of the season.
Thank you.
Nice one.
Cheers. Thanks, Rob.
Okay, that's it for episode 13. Hope you enjoyed it. If you did, pop over to iTunes and give us a quick review there. And don't forget, we've got our next episode coming out on the 25th of July, so get subscribed to make sure you're the first to find out when it's there. Okay, until next time, get out and ride.